You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters. With 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to another Match Day Pod on the Tyne, and it's a big one. It's Arsenal at St James's Park. Always a game full of fireworks and controversy, this one. Let's see if there's something else for Mikel Arteta to whinge about.
Dangerous cross, flicked away by Bird, brought down by Ezra.
Oh, good save.
With a huge save.
Good save.
Bruno makes a run front post, it's gone short to Gordon, back to Tonali. Here's the cross, looking for Fultamana! Nick Fultamana! On the end of Tonali's cross after the short corner. And the big German gets another goal, and another with his
head. Short one to Ezra and Odegaard, back out to Rice. He sends in a delivery, it's there! It's a late equaliser from Arsenal, and it's Mikel Merino. Left-footed corner kick dropped into the six-yard box. Arsenal have scored! Nick Pope got stranded, and Arsenal have turned it around to potentially win in injury time.
So the time is 8:45 on Sunday evening. We are stood looking at the strawberry.
Looking quite longingly at it.
Looking longingly at it, yeah. Wondering what may have been, because Newcastle United have lost 2-1 to Arsenal, having led for a large part of the match. It means that Newcastle have still only won one Premier League match up to this stage of the season. They are down in 15th place in the table, having been in the live Premier League table up to 8th. George, how are you feeling right now in terms of looking back on that match? Because it was painful in the sense that Newcastle conceded twice late on, but in terms of the actual wider context of the match itself, it didn't feel like a travesty in terms of actual general style of play and general who were the team really bossing the game.
I agree with that. Normally it's Mikel Arteta's salty tears of despair that we're all enjoying at this point. And now it's our turn again. It feels pretty reminiscent of the Liverpool match at the end of last month, where Newcastle lost late on. But this was not the same kind of performance as that day, I don't think. I think it did feel like sort of Arsenal had learned from their previous very painful appearances here at Newcastle. But, I mean, as you say, not a travesty, but to be leading a match 1-0 in the 84th minute and then to contrive to lose it to two corners late on is not good. And so Arsenal get a measure of revenge for their previous appearances here.
Yeah, I mean, so the team selection, Eddie Howe started with three centre-backs, so I assumed it was going to be a three-man central defence. And I even said on live radio on BBC Radio Newcastle, yeah, there's absolutely no chance that Dan Byrne will be left back, as the BBC had put online in their sort of match formation.
You know your stuff.
I know. Yeah.
You did, of course, follow that up with absolute
pearl. Yeah, we'll come on to that
during the game.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll come on to that. But actually, Dan Byrne was back at left back, a position he's not played or not started matches in since really the back end of the 2023-24 season, almost exclusively last year. He'd moved back to centre-back and start of this season. He's put on weight to do that, but Newcastle went for height. They had Joel Linton on the side as well. It was basically the usual 4-3-3 with Livramento shifted back to right-back. Botman and Chow continued at centre-half, and then Gordon was back from his suspension in terms of for a Premier League game on one side, Jacob Murphy on the other, Nick Voldemort up front, and the usual midfield three. What did you make of the team selection, and how did you think that they fared?
Well, it was interesting, and it was obviously quite deliberate. I mean, you know, we saw later on in the match, Kieran Trippier came on, so the way Newcastle had started the season with Lewis Hall still coming back from injury was with Trippier on the right of the defence and Livramento on the left. So he could have done that today, obviously, and didn't, but put Dan at left back. And, you know, the intent was pretty clear there. Newcastle did have a very big team. You looked at what they did in that flurry of corners that they had in the first half, not including the goal, obviously, but before then they'd had, I don't know, three or four corners. They've stuck the ball directly into the box. They've surrounded David Raya. They've, you know, attempted to put pressure on. That was a very deliberate strategy, it felt to me. It was a very...
Chow got on the end of one and knocked it down, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a very, you know, that was clearly the intent, as far as I could sort of tell, was to go direct, was to be long when necessary, was to be physical where possible. But they did not come up against a compliant Arsenal team this time. As I said, I think Arsenal were kind of well drilled. They were well disciplined. So I don't think it worked in that sense. But you could see what the idea was. It was to try and bully Arsenal. It was to try and get them to react. I thought those set pieces that I mentioned earlier were actually pretty good. I think they did cause problems, and it was obviously from one of them that Newcastle took the lead.
Well, I mean, in an offensive sense, I agree that they did cause problems. I mean, it was interesting in Howe's press conference afterwards, he basically referred to the fact that defensively he thought it had worked well for quite a while, but basically it was almost too many set pieces that caused Newcastle losing in the end, and we'll come on to that a bit later on. But early on, Arsenal did have chances. Ezra had a really early chance, which Nick Pope, a wonderful save down to his left, tip wide. Ezra had another chance, which was a sort of half volley from the edge of the area, went through a lot of bodies. Pope saved that one. Trossard lashed a shot off the post and wide. So Arsenal had opportunities. It wasn't like Newcastle's previous matches where basically they've restricted size to very, very little. Arsenal did have opportunities, and that without Nick Pope, I think Newcastle would have fallen behind. There was also the penalty incident, or the penalty that wasn't, the penalty that was awarded on the field by Jared Gillett, and then he was told to go to his the VAR monitor on the side of the pitch. So basically what happened there was Gyökeres ran onto a under-hit Jacob Murphy back pass to Nick Pope, and Nick Pope rushed out to try and get towards it. Pope gets a slight touch on the ball, but then follows through and his knee knocks into Gyökeres' leg. Gyökeres goes over quite easily. I actually thought on the field this looks like a stonewall penalty. I still think it probably was. I'm probably of the opinion that it probably shouldn't have been overturned in terms of was it clear and obvious, but it was. He went across and overturned it. What did you make of that situation, and did you think it should have been overturned?
I mean, at that point, all I was doing was anticipating Mikel Arteta's response. I mean, that was the thing I was really looking forward to. I don't mean that, you know, I'm being silly, but he was going pretty mad on the touchline, head in his hands, you know, kind of laughing, sarcastically applauding the referee. In the meantime, Jason Tindall was saying that Gyökeres had clearly dived twice. He's dived. He was saying that. So it was, you know, the usual.
He was gesturing the dive.
Yes, he was gesturing the dive. It was the usual argy-bargy between the two benches. And you have to say, like, the whole match was played at, you know, ridiculous pace, unrelenting pace. You know, we are obviously very disappointed with the result and, you know, kind of very frustrated with it. But, yeah, the match itself was that just, you know, mayhem kind of game. Yeah, I mean, first viewing of it, it looks like a penalty to me as well. But I don't have much to add. VAR did its job.
Well, VAR, yeah, it was overturned, and yeah, it seemed Arteta was there in disbelief, almost on the touchline, shaking his head. He didn't actually lose his cool, though. It was more just sort of like almost a mocking sort of shaking the head. But Newcastle then did take the lead. The chances were few and far between for Newcastle, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, we'll come on to this, but it's a concern. They took the sort of one big chance that they did create, but it's just not happening. You know, four goals in league games this season, that's not enough. No team has scored fewer this season, and it's not, doesn't feel like a blip. They just don't look like a team who are going to score goals at the moment. I think you and I, you know, did have that conversation at one point. It's like, this, you know, they don't look like scoring. And they do have offensive players on the pitch, you know, but this is the problem of having to work out what you're doing as the season is going on. You know, don't need to kind of rake over old ground. There is context for it, not having a striker at the start of the season, a senior striker, and now having a completely different one, you know, obviously with other new members of the squad as well, and trying to find a way of playing, trying to be effective with a new striker who has completely different sort of qualities. Great that he got another goal, took it very well. I mean, this, you know, this towering man who's supposedly not good in the air has scored two very good headers so far, which is encouraging, but it doesn't feel like he's in the game enough. And again, you know, this was a game that Arsenal, I think, handled very well and dominated, but the, you know, the wingers, the wide players who were so used to being dangerous, kind of aren't quite firing in the same way as they have been either.
Yeah, and so would you like to do your embarrass me again then, bring up what I said at that moment then?
Well, there was that sort of great moment, wasn't there? I think it was the 33rd minute when you turned to me and said, Valtamada, he's just not been involved, has he? And at that precise moment, he nudges into, who was it? Was it
Mosquera?
Into Mosquera, who is trying to play the ball back. Well, I say he nudges into him, I think he does enough to put him off, puts him under pressure in a part of the pitch where really Arsenal shouldn't have been in trouble. There's an awful attempted back pass. Just shows it's quite easy to make mistakes. The ball goes out of play for a corner, and yes, it's from there. And I said to you at that point, you've spoken just at the moment he's made an impact and Newcastle will now score from a corner. That's pretty much the only thing I've called right in my entire life, but I got that right and you got it very wrong.
Yeah, it is a family trait that we say things and then the opposite tends to happen. But yeah, then, as you mentioned earlier, Newcastle had been going direct into the box with the corner, and you did say at that point, oh, they're going to do the same again.
And but effectively they did. It was a short corner. Tonali plays it to Gordon, gets it back, and then curls in the ball. It was still a cross into the danger area. But yes, it wasn't taken direct from there.
Yeah, and it was a lovely cross, and Valdemar moved forward slightly, good movement, and then Gabriel was in front of him, and he gives him the tiniest little push. We call it a nudge.
Yes, because it looked like an completely unmarked header, but yeah, actually Gabriel's on the floor.
On the floor, yeah, and then sort of gestures the referee as soon as Valdemar directs the header. And again, in the Leeds' end, he scores. He's had two shots on target now as a Newcastle player, scored them both. He's played twice at St James's Park, scored two goals, but he's only had four shots so far in three Premier League matches, which sort of says, I think, a lot about the sort of lack of service towards him. But there was that instance, so he scores the goal and Newcastle have the lead, and then there's a bit of needle between him and Gabriel after that point, isn't there?
Yes, and so there's a kind of swinging arm from Gabriel, who, you know, he was definitely the sort of action-packed figure from this match, involved pretty much everywhere. He swung an arm at Walter Marder, who's felt it, and it's not really been seen by the referee, it doesn't feel like, but definite. You know, seeing it back, there's definite claims for a red there. And Valtamada says on TV afterwards that he felt something, and, you know, perhaps he could have gone down, but that's not the kind of player he is. That's not the kind of football he plays, and didn't. But yeah, so he was lucky to stay on the pitch. And it was this kind of moment. You're just looking. It's the kind of game you're looking in every direction. There's something happening somewhere.
And yeah, I mean, we've mentioned the sort of lack of opportunities. I thought that the Newcastle created. I thought Anthony Gordon, one chance he sort of creates in the second half, he gets the byline and pulls it back and there was nobody in the box. Jacob Murphy was largely anonymous, I thought, for the first half. Newcastle's midfield, I didn't think, I mean, Joe Linton marched around as he usually does, won the ball a few times, gave the ball away, tackles here and there, give away fouls. Bruno Guimaraes, I thought, didn't really control the game particularly well. This is not meaning to dig out individual players, but I just think it sort of shows there is a general disconnect, and Valdemar wasn't involved that much. Before he'd actually scored, he'd had nine touches, none of which were in the opposition box. It wasn't like Newcastle were even carving out openings to then lead to chances. I didn't think it was like that. They just kept giving the ball away, and second half once there was the restart, it did feel, and you kept on saying to me, you've got a bad feeling about this, Newcastle can't keep the ball, and also Arsenal just seemed to be sort of growing into it.
Well, by contrast, Arsenal had 22 touches in Newcastle's box in the first half, which I think is the second most of any game this season. I mean, there have been times, you know, that they've been accused of having possession for the sake of it, obviously including the weekend before, playing with a handbrake on, that sort of thing. It didn't feel like that game again today. I do think that they had control, and it felt like Newcastle were always searching for something, either at the back where Nick Pope made that string of incredible saves, as you said, or an attack where they were really just labouring to sort of be dangerous. So, you know, great that they had the goal, great that they had the lead, and, you know, obviously funny in some ways, but it didn't and doesn't feel sustainable.
As a second half one, Newcastle almost, I thought they sat back would be the wrong, I don't think they necessarily sat back, but I just don't think they ever took the initiative to try and go and get a second goal, or whether they were even capable of being able to do that. The lack of opportunity they are sort of creating, and Arsenal grew into it. But I also thought that the substitutions, Arsenal's had a positive effect, and Newcastle's didn't change them in the positive sense. I mean, I think there was a lot of surprise from all of us, really, when Valdemar went off and Nasula came on. But at the minute, Newcastle need to still manage his minutes. He's still adjusting to the Premier League. It was a physical game. It was a fast game at times. And so Nasula comes on, and I don't think he did necessarily anything wrong. But again, do you get that same control with him up front? Possibly not. Alanga came on, didn't really get much service, ran around, but didn't really help. And then, obviously, there's the big... I think, actually, in hindsight, if we look back, the big moment when Tino Livramento goes down, lands awkwardly on his left knee, immediately signals he knows that there's something wrong. He doesn't scream out in pain, but you can tell he knows there's something wrong. This is somebody who's had an ACL injury before. I hope it isn't that, but it looked serious. He was taken off on a stretcher, and I just felt like that sucked a little bit of momentum out of Newcastle as well, because he is such a huge player for them.
Yeah, and you know, you're asking another centre half to come on in Jamal Lascelles, who's not played a lot of football. Suddenly Newcastle have four centre halves on the pitch. I mean, not all playing at centre half, obviously, but they're sort of scrabbling around a bit. And yeah, I mean, just on that Livramento thing, echo what you said. Hopefully it's not too bad. Eddie Howe couldn't really provide any additional information afterwards, just sort of said it was distressing to see him come off like that. He's been an incredibly important player for Newcastle. If he was out for any length of time, that would be a big blow. And, you know, absolutely right. He's been very good this season, often playing at left back before Lewis Hall came back into the team. Lewis Hall was rested, by the way. It was all sort of fatigued. That was the idea after playing a couple of games.
Just on that, I mean, that there is, and I'm not saying there's a concern in terms of Lewis Hall coming back, but I think if Livramento is going to be out for any sort of extended period, the fact that they were able to manage Lewis Hall's minutes up until this point, you are a little bit concerned that going forward maybe he is going to have to play a little bit more than intended because of that. But anyway, that's just...
They've still got Dan Burn left back.
So then, you know, Newcastle are sort of switching things around again at the back. And, you know, that's not what you necessarily want when you're really clinging to a, you know, clinging to a 1-0 lead. Or if not clinging to it, you know, when you think about kind of these games against Arsenal last season, you know, but particularly the two League Cup semi-finals, Newcastle did have to defend for long periods, but they were so controlled, they never had any control over this game. But what you're hoping is that as it goes on longer, you know, Arsenal become more and more ragged, more desperate, there are chances to pick them off. It just never went like that. You know, I think Arsenal, without sort of having enormous quality or X factor or, you know, difference, I think they managed the game better than Newcastle did.
I agree. And they sort of stuck out what they were doing, and we know how strong they are from set pieces, and both of their goals come, one of them directly, one of them indirectly, from set pieces. And in the first one's a sort of wonderful cross from Declan Rice, and a flicked header from Mikel Merino come back to haunt his former club. I mean, he's a lot physically more filled out than he was when he was at Newcastle, when he was still in his early 20s, and he scored quite a few of those goals for Arsenal. It felt at that point, it felt like Newcastle were going to be hanging on from that point onwards because they hadn't really offered much going forward. It had almost that they were quite content to try and win at 1-0. But then once Marino scored, it felt like Arsenal maybe would have another gear. And then obviously the sting in the tail at the end, which we've praised Nick Pope rightly because he was brilliant in terms of saving shots and keeping Newcastle in it. But he...
Newcastle lost their heads,
didn't they, with the way we've written it. Really.
And, you know, if you wanted further sort of evidence that it wasn't their day, just after the equaliser, there'd been that moment when Gabriel, yet again, had slid in, the ball's hit his hand, and his hand was definitely in a sort of unnatural position as he was sliding in on Alanga, who had burst up the pitch.
Now, I thought that was a penalty just on that, and I realised that the part of the reason why, I mean, it wasn't given on the field, was it enough to overturn it? Possibly not. And VAR said that the ball ricocheted off his leg and onto his arm. I did think his arm, I know he's sliding in, but his arm was outstretched up in the air, so I thought that could have been a penalty.
Yeah, but, you know, that it's not your day, that was kind of further evidence. And then, yes, yeah, Nick Pope, I mean, it's so difficult to criticise him because he had kept Newcastle in it. I think that's fair to say. You know, a series of exceptional saves, blocks, commanding his area. He was absolutely needed. Without him, they would have lost the game much earlier. But, you know, suddenly he became, you know, the way we've written about it in our piece, it's like suddenly by the end he was even infected by the kind of general mayhem, and Newcastle were crying out just for a breath. Now, I'm sure it was well intentioned that he was trying to get the ball up the pitch as quickly as possible so that Newcastle could try and go for a winner, but it was at a moment where they, you know, I've used the word control a lot, but they had no control at that point. He kicks the ball sideways out of his hands. It bounces. It goes straight to an Arsenal player, and then Arsenal are breaking. And Newcastle, and you can almost feel what's coming next. You know, it's like they needed just 30 seconds, 20 seconds, 10 seconds of respite, and they didn't get it. And Arsenal had the scent of blood in their nostrils. The ball goes out for a corner, and it's from that corner that they get the winner. As I say, it's very harsh on Nick Pope because overall he was excellent, but that was a kind of rush of blood to the head at the exact moment when he didn't need it.
But to throw it forward, and I think that, and this is maybe me just trying to create a narrative, one that isn't there, but I do get the sense that part of the reason why the Newcastle players reacted like that is it would have been huge for Newcastle to win today. And a point was still actually a good result, not because in the context of Newcastle having led for so long, I can get that it would have felt in some ways that they dropped 2 points, but a point against this Arsenal side who are title challengers, they're probably going to push Liverpool pretty close this year, the depth they have, it would have been a good result, but it felt because the way the season, Newcastle season has gone so far, they need a Premier League win, and they need a win really in the Champions League. This is a big week, 3 games within 8 days, and to me that's added to that sense of just unease, which is maybe adding into it. Now everyone around the club, all supporters, accept that there is going to be a period of transition post Alexander Isak, and trying to get more goals in the team, trying to build as you go, really, as they're having to, and lack of actual training sessions on the pitch. I asked Eddie Howe about this press conference on Friday, and he was saying that we basically don't have full sessions of full contact. We can't have them. We have to work in smaller groups, and they're spending time with individual players instead. And that's what it felt like to me, is that it just feels that the need for a win is starting to affect everyone maybe a little bit mentally. And now going into Wednesday, that feels big. And I'm not going to call it a must-win game because it's an early part.
It was interesting because Kyle also said afterwards,
I think after today and the timing of the result, the manner of the result, you want another game quickly to put that to bed and change the feeling and change the energy. So I'm pleased we're playing against Ilkut.
You know, that's one way of looking at it. Another way would have been quite nice to go on the training ground, keep working, keep trying to work out what they're wanting from their a new way of playing with a new centre forward and getting the best out of him. You actually have looked at sort of stats in terms of shots on target, and they're just way down this season, aren't they?
Yeah, every key attack and metric, goals, as we know, XG. For those who like that and who dislike it, but shots on target, touches in the opposition box, they're all down. And this season they haven't had more than 4 shots on target in a single game. They had 4 against Wolves, but they've had fewer than that in every single other match. They're just not even creating that many opportunities, and it's not 10, 15 games, so you can't extrapolate too much from it. But equally, it's not two or three games.
No.
We're now six games in the Premier League season. And they didn't have loads against Barcelona either in the Champions League, albeit against a very good Barcelona side. But they are struggling in that regard, and they are having to manage the minutes. And this is the Juan Wissa not being available situation.
Yeah.
Just exacerbates everything further. Thankfully, hopefully, there's only two, maybe three or four more matches that he's going to be available for, we hope, after the international break. Howe said that Brighton is sort of like the soft return date for him, so hopefully he will be in and around the team by then. That lessens the load a bit on Voldemort and others. But then again, you're also integrating someone who's different to Voldemort, so there's going to be other issues potentially there in terms of how immediately and seamlessly he fits into the side. But I do think that Wednesday, mood and momentum-wise, feels massive. Newcastle have lost their first Champions League match against a very good Barcelona side, but they have back-to-back home matches after this. Union Saint-Gilloise, like Newcastle, are in pot four, but they're top of their league. They won their first match away at PSV 3-1, which I think surprised everyone. This is going to be a difficult game in many ways, but I also think Newcastle need a positive result. I'm not saying a win would be ideal, but it certainly get a draw or at the very least. I mean, you're going to be going out to Belgium. Rumour has it there's going to be a red carpet, and you know there's also going to be sort of guard of honour for you returning to the country of your birth. How are you feeling before your trip out there?
Well, no, I'm as you say, I'm going to be treated with the respect and dignity that I deserve, which I so rarely get from you or from anybody in Newcastle. I mean, I haven't updated my spreadsheet recently, but I think I am the seventh most famous person or thing to come out of Belgium, you know, below Brussels sprouts, below Tintin, below Shoppers. Eddie Merckx, below chips and mayonnaise, but that's pretty much my level. So, yeah, I'm expecting great things. But it is fascinating for the team, you know, and when I say fascinating, that's not quite the right word, but they are having to, you know, to come to terms with their new reality on the hoof. There's like no respite in this run of fixtures. It's match after match after match, and they're trying to sort of get to grips with this new way of playing as they're doing it. They haven't had a pre-season, so there has to be a bit of understanding to that, albeit it's not easy after that kind of defeat.
Yeah, and then after Union Saint-Gilloise, it's then a quick turnaround. We're going to be back here next Sunday, and Newcastle have Forest. Nottingham Forest in the Premier League, that Ange Postecoglou's back. He's had a difficult start there. It feels like, momentum-wise, as I say, it would be nice to go into that international break with some positive momentum rather than just these same issues that we can talk about longer term. They're not going to solve all their problems in the course of the next 5 or 6 days, but they could hopefully put a sticking plaster over them so that it's not just negativity maybe for that entire international break.
No, and it's a very simplistic thing to say, but it's so true. It's like you can be playing with as much confidence as you want. You can have great spirit in the dressing room. You can have, you know, interesting, exciting new signings, but until you get wins, they're not backed up with things. That is the ultimate evidence. You go back to Eddie Howe's first season post takeover, how important that 1-0 win at Leeds was, because you had people like, they loved training sessions, it was different, it was intense, it was detailed, they felt like they were learning. But at the same time, when it got to that game at Elland Road, they were starting to kind of look around at each other and saying, yeah, but like, where are the results from it? And you need it, managers need it, teams need it, clubs need it. And so, you know, if they get a positive result in the Champions League, that'll make everyone feel better. If they can then follow it up with a victory against Nottingham Forest, you'll start seeing solutions come naturally, organically, because confidence rises. It's such a massive thing. You know, we know that Newcastle have got the basis of a really, really good team. It's just that they have to work out, you know, it's like, you know, we've said this, we've written this, they're like a jigsaw. You know, they've got all the picture, all the pieces. It's about putting them in the right order. Now, sadly, we also have to
piss on further chips,
I'm afraid, because Newcastle United's women team were also in action today, earlier kickoff at Gateshead, and they've lost 1-0 to Charlton. They conceded a second half penalty to Kate Bradley. It was given away by Demi Stokes, who later clipped the top of the crossbar. There were 10 minutes of added time at the end. There was a late one-on-one chance when Murphy shot straight at the keeper, but at the end of it, it means 5 games in all competitions, 1 win, and that was back on the first day of the season. So they're 9th in WSL2, only 6 points off the two automatic promotion places. But this is another team, so it seems, so it feels like. We've not seen them live yet. We hope to rectify that as soon as possible. But getting to grips also with a big summer of change, lots of changes to the team and behind the scenes. Anyway, we've got some words from Becky Langley. She remains optimistic, and this is what she said afterwards.
I thought the performance was brilliant. I thought we were by far the more dominant team. Our ball progression from the goalkeeper right the way through the thirds I thought was excellent. Back three did well, keeper did well. I thought Jordan Morgan and Jazz were very complimentary as a midfield three to be able to look to play through. And then when we've got into those advanced areas, we probably didn't either have enough creativity as we got into the final third, or in saying that, for all the possession we had, we didn't create as much as what we would have liked, but I still think we had three or four really good chances in the game that when luck's not on your side, it's not on your side. And yeah, we haven't been clinical in those moments. We wanted to be really ball dominant today. We played in a very different way on Wednesday night. We were very direct on Wednesday night. It's different strategies for different games in terms of which personnel, but I think we probably still are exploring who that strongest 11 is. We got a lot of players joined right at the end of the window, probably similar to the men's team, and you need time to work with them. But from the Birmingham game to the Charlton game, you can see how that midfield has started to really connect and started to find their feet with those patterns of plays, and it's credit to the midfield. I thought they were excellent today.
Right, that's your lot. Thank you very much indeed for listening. We really love bringing you these matchday pods. It's our way of getting matchday stuff out the way early.
It's cathartic in some ways.
Boxing off, I do find it quite cathartic. I'm very impressed. You've done all of this without any notes, but you still have that. You still have that photographic detail in your head, whereas I have nothing in my head apart from anger and broken dreams. Until next time, thank you very much for listening to Pod on the Tyne.
There you go. Thank you for listening to this Pod on the Tyne Match Day podcast. We'll be back Thursday with our regular midweek show, but please keep your eyes peeled for a special Pod on the Tyne episode around the Union Saint-Gilloise Champions League game to kick off our subscription services. More info on that in the coming days. Thanks very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye.